Hello and welcome, everybody. This is the Texas Rangers Spitballing Podcast. My name is Ben Rogers, and I'm joined by my good buddy Jamie Newberg, and there are plenty of Texas Rangers baseball to discuss, so we'll just dive right in. Jamie, there's panic on the streets of Rangerland as one of the most reliable pitchers in this bullpen over the last couple years is really, really struggling in a bad way. How concerned should everybody be about Jake Diekman's struggles?
Well, I think it would be disingenuous to say you shouldn't be concerned. I mean, he's had a week or two now where he's just not getting anybody out. And part of it is he's not commanding the fastball, and part of it is he's getting hit hard when he is finding the zone. And it's tough to see because for the first 4 months of the season, he was better than he was even last summer when he came over in the trade with Cole Hamels. He was dominating, and there was a time where he was probably this team's best reliever for a good stretch. And when you can, you know, bring in especially a left-hander with that kind of velocity and a breaking ball to match and use him as a weapon even before the ninth inning, that's a tremendous weapon. And he just has lost the feel lately. I don't know if it's a release point issue. I did hear him say that he thinks that they've maybe spotted a couple things on video. And, he's got to get straightened out because this team needs him not to get to October, because they're going to get there, but they're going to need him in the playoffs to advance. I mean, he's such a key part of that pen, and it's tough watching him fight through this right now. But you know, there are a few weeks left, and hopefully he can tweak things to the point where he gets that feel back and returns to that dominant status that he had been giving this team in the first half.
Yeah, I think that's the best possible news, that there's time to figure it out. Fortunately, this year the Rangers aren't in a heated battle that's going to go down to the wire. But man, I mean, Diekman is the poster child for the struggles in the bullpen right now. And I mean, Dyson is not as effective as he was last year. At least, you know, I'm not sitting here looking at the stats. I know he's not striking out as many guys, and I feel more nervous when I'm watching him. You can tell me if I'm right or wrong on that. Bush has been electric at times, but sometimes that doesn't feel like the most secure situation with Bush in there. You end up biting your nails a little bit. Kella has gotten it back together here of late, but really was in a bad way for a while. I don't know if Jeffress is going to be back. Barnett's been pretty good, and hey, maybe Sheppers can add something. Claudio's been fantastic in long relief, but I just overall, even though Diekman is the scariest because of how important he is and how badly he's struggling, I really don't feel good for the bullpen overall. Do you?
Well, I feel better about it now that Dyson has gotten things back together, because he had his own stretch where he wasn't able to command the fastball, and then, you know, everything works off of that. But he seems to have gotten it back. Losing Jeffress was big, because not only was he a guy that was effective in a ninth inning role with the Brewers and was, you know, being relied on here in the seventh inning, which, you know, just lengthens your bullpen, but you know, he was losing him just means other guys are having to work more, and you hate to see that. Barnett's been nails all year, and I would just hate to see him lose a little bit of effectiveness a month from now just because of the workload he's been under. And without Jeffress, Barnett has to work more often. Claudio's been great, and he's enabled Jeff Banister to take the foot off the gas on a couple other guys from time to time, because Claudio can give you multiple innings, and he's been really good. We'll see what Sheppers gives this team. The first outing looked good, promising. Kella, like you said, seems to be putting it back together. He's not yet where he was last summer. Bush, to me, has been the real surprise. Like, if you asked me in June, you know, who I was concerned about sustaining things into the fall, he'd have been number one, just because there's a guy that had never been above double A. He's relatively new as a pitcher, so you're putting tread on his tires that he's never had to deal with before. And I was, not that I was worried that he couldn't handle it, but at some point, you're asking the arm to do more than it's ever done in a guy's lifetime, and he's already 30. So I was a little worried about him sustaining it, and if anything, he's gotten better. Hopefully that lasts. Losing Sean Tolleson was big. You know, we talk a lot about Jeffress being gone. We don't talk much about Tolleson, because maybe because he just wasn't as effective this year as he was last year by a long shot. But having him around at least gave you some more length, especially if he got the feel for his changeup back. But with him out, you know, that's another piece that takes your bullpen away from the strength that it could have been. And so, yeah, there's some concern because you've got even the guys going well right now, including Dyson, you know, had his own bad stretch earlier, and then guys like Barnett and Bush, you just hope they can sustain it, but we don't have a track record to know that.
So, you know, we talked about Claudio there a little bit. Man, there's something about his vibe that just, he's so unique. He's so awkward looking with this giant torso, and he almost looks like he's elastic, and he's kind of got a vampire vibe to him. He's a unique looking dude with just a crazy delivery. I didn't have any expectations for him earlier in the season. In fact, I was surprised that he was even getting burned on the major league level. He's just been phenomenal.
He really has. And you know, you go back to guys like Darren O'Day, that guys that have kind of a funky look, they tend to have stretches where they're really good and then stretches where they're not so good. And you look at O'Day, he got a 3-year, 8-figure contract, whereas just a few years ago, the Rangers DFA'd him when he wasn't going so well. I'm not saying that Claudio's headed to, you know, 3 years, $20-plus million down the road, but he does give hitters a look that they're not familiar with, and pitching, as we've talked about here before, it's all about disruption of timing. It's not, you know, who could throw the hardest or whose curveball has the biggest break. It's disrupting timing by being able to show hitters different looks. And Claudio not only offers a different look from everybody else on the Rangers staff and maybe, you know, almost anybody else in the league, but he offers different looks within his own repertoire. He has different changeups that are at different velocities from each other. And even when he, you know, when he decides to go to that fastball, sort of like, you know, you see R.A. Dickey unleash 84 and you close your eyes, but because of everything else Dickey throws, the fastball works. Well, Claudio can get it up to, you know, up there 85, 86. It's not a great fastball, but when you mix in those 67s and those 73s, that 86 can jump on you, and it's worked. I think even the Rangers will probably admit privately they didn't expect this out of him, but he's been really good, and it's partially because he's commanding his stuff. You know, when hitters give up on a pitch because it fooled them, if it's not landing in the strike zone, then they end up on first base. But Claudio's been throwing strikes with all his different funky stuff, and it's worked so far. And I'm sure the league will start to develop a book on him and his tendencies and so forth. But if he can sustain this thing, you know, through October, this is a guy that it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up making that 25-man roster in the playoffs.
Man, and I hope he's not a vampire, because if he is, there'd be a huge book on him pitching in Transylvania. I mean, he would have been there for a million years. Okay, so let's talk about the rotation, because obviously we're concerned about the bullpen. There's concerns about the rotation as well. Even Yu Darvish had a little hiccup here, which is, you know, not very you-like, but it just so happens right when Hamels is struggling a little bit. So I'm going to go ahead and say I'm not worried about those guys because they're monsters and they'll be fine. But I am worried about AJ. I am worried about Martin. I am worried about Derek after a couple shaky outings now, after a couple good ones. Luckily, Colby's coming back, but it's hard to really know what to expect from him. What are you more worried about going into the playoffs, the rotation or the bullpen, or is it even close?
The rotation's the bigger worry, just because your rotation sets the tone. You can't survive in the playoffs by being down, you know, 4 runs early every other night. That just doesn't work. And, you know, the way pitching staffs are set up in the playoffs, where you're a little deeper in the pen and thinner in the rotation just because of the off days, if a guy's in trouble in the third inning, you know, you're going to pull him and just go to somebody else, and that's okay. But you can't rely on doing that every other game in the playoffs and expect to advance. So, you know, to me, the rotation is the bigger worry, just because you've got to have, you know, your rotation clicking to the extent where you've got 3 guys you feel good about in a competition maybe for the 4th spot. You can't be worrying about everybody past 1 and 2 and even have questions about 1 and 2if they've been shaky going into October. You know, one thing that's, you know, maybe worth relying on from a history standpoint is Cliff Lee wasn't real good for Texas in the regular season when they got him. I want to say he won 4 games out of 9 or 11 starts, something like that. And then we know what he did in the postseason. He flipped a switch. And you'd like to be able to say, well, you know, Hamels and Darvish can go ahead and flip that switch now. The hope, of course, is sort of like what Hamels did last year, where, you know, when they needed him to beat the Angels on that last day, and he was just masterful and then good in the playoffs. You hope that that's where Hamels is, that he's going to have to work some things out, but when it comes down to games that you just can't lose and can't afford to be down a few runs in, that he's going to find that extra level. We don't know about Darvish from that standpoint because he doesn't have the track record, but, you know, he certainly has the stuff where hopefully you, Darvish, in October is a different animal in a good way. You always trust Colby Lewis. We don't know yet until we see him this weekend, you know, how it looks coming back from the injury. But in terms of his mental toughness and ability to sort of lock in, I feel good about him. And between Holland and Perez, you know, maybe Griffin if he just starts to get really hot towards the end. You know, those guys are probably all competing for one spot, because my guess is that Lewis is going to get a rotation spot as long as he's, you know, healthy and commanding the baseball. But yeah, Hamels and Darvish, they're the ones who set the tone. And again, thinking back on Cliff Lee, you just hope that a guy that has ace-type stuff can find a new level when you get to the playoffs.
All right, so that's the areas of concern. However, there's plenty to be excited and happy about. Obviously, the Rangers have this massive lead and have had a fantastic season. But, you know, here down the stretch, you have to wonder where they'd be without the July trades. I mean, Beltran and Lucroy are doing such heavy lifting and are, you know, I think it's easy to overlook as you look at this massive lead, but man, those July trades were huge.
They were. I mean, you look at how the offense is going right now, and it's really clicking most nights, and, you know, they've had some record-setting stretches in terms of scoring in double digits or close to it, and Lucroy and Beltran have been a big part of that, even Gomez. But you go back to the first part of August when those guys first arrived, the offense wasn't doing much at all except for those two guys, Beltran and Lucroy, before Gomez got here. I think over the first week or so, I think Beltran and Lucroy had driven in more than a third of the team's runs, and if they weren't around for that stretch, you know, who knows? I mean, the lead in the division is safe enough now, it feels like, that even if, you know, they lost 2, 3, 4 more games early in August, they'd still be in pretty good shape. But at the same time, you'd be a lot more worried if they were getting, you know, at-bats from Profar, for instance, that are now going to Beltran, or if, you know, Chirinos and Bobby Wilson were your catchers in the lineup every night, as opposed to Chirinos once a week and Lucroy the rest of the time. They've been huge. And Gomez, man, you got to give that guy some credit. You got to give the Rangers credit. He was having an awful season with the Astros, coming off a bad year last year. He's made some adjustments. He's seeing more pitches. He's not flailing away nearly as often as we had seen. You know, even if you limited just to the games when Houston played Texas that most of us watched, seems like that guy was losing his helmet and falling down more often in just those games than he has in his few weeks here since he arrived as a Ranger. I think he's made some adjustments with the hitting coaches. We've talked about this before, but I think it's good that he's in a situation where he is not being counted on to be a leader in the clubhouse or to be a focal point of the offense. He's a complimentary player here. He seems to have embraced that role and done his part, which is small. You know, he's not being counted on to carry this team at all, but he's contributed. And without those three guys, you know, maybe the record wouldn't be so bad that we're looking right now at, you know, having to fight for this team's life to get to the playoffs. But you do feel better going into October having those three around.
Well, man, before we get out of here on the Spitballing podcast, I think we need to tip our caps to Rougned Odor. Just remarkable that he's reached 30 home runs this season. And I'm sitting here wondering what his ultimate career high home run total will be for a single season. Just a tiny package to have that much power. But to me, the thing that's even more remarkable about this is he swings at everything. He's got 15 walks on the season, I think. I'm not sure if he has gotten one in the last couple nights, but I think he's got 15 walks on the season, which is it's just crazy. I don't know why anybody would ever throw him anything to hit, considering that he's going to be very difficult to walk. And I'm not saying that to take a shot. I'm saying that because he's 22. And as this kid matures and learns to lay off pitches and is more selective, you know, he's going to be a guy that could play second base and hit 40 home runs a year.
Yeah, and I look at not just the power. I think if you look over the past couple weeks. I think it's been subtle, but I think he is taking a few more pitches that are out of the zone. He still seems to be vulnerable to that fastball that's about 6 inches off the plate outside. But the one up in his eyes, he still swings from time to time at it, but not as often. And the one, the breaking ball in the dirt, same thing. He's still swinging and missing at it, but from time to time, he's holding back. And, I mean, the guy's still 22 years old. And to me, what's so exciting is, as good a player as he is right now, he wants it bad enough, and he seems like the kind of kid that will mature in terms of his approach. I think as he starts to lay off those pitches more and more, 23, 24 years old, not only will the home runs sustain and maybe even go up, but this guy is going to end up possibly being a, you know, a 280, 290 hitter because he hits the ball so hard. You know, ground balls are going to get through the infield that might not for other guys. He's going to learn how to beat the shift because they're going to start putting that guy in the short right out of the infield. He can go the other way. I think this guy's offensive game, defensive game too, I think both are going to get better just because the flashes that we see out of him right now are just going to become more consistent as he gets older.
All right. He's Jamie Newberg. I'm Ben Rogers. This has been the Spitballin' Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please get out there and share it on social media. Tell your friends about it, and by all means, subscribe. We are hard charging towards October baseball and couldn't be more excited about it. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. Until next time, happy baseball.